Welcome to the Insurance Huddle, hosted by me, Dr. John Wales. This is the place to be for insurance brokers, agents, and agencies, where we break down topics important to the insurance community with insights from industry experts. Welcome to the Insurance Huddle, the place to be for insurance brokers, agents, and agencies, where we break down topics important to the insurance community with insights from industry expert. Today's expert has built products and led engineering, design, and IT teams at companies with credentials such as Fortune 500 fast-growing companies, the Inc. 5000 list, and Entrepreneur's 100 Most Brilliant Companies. He has been the guy in the hot seat, responsible for defending small businesses from cyber attacks, and has a founder's perspective to cybersecurity in an increasingly complicated and risk-filled environment. He is here today to assist us in writing more cyber policies by helping us increase our application accuracy, getting better rates for our insureds, and increasing our cyber retention. I would like to welcome to the huddle the CEO and founder of Havoc Shield, Brian Fritton. Welcome to the huddle.
Thanks for having me, John. It's great to be here.
It's awesome to have you on our podcast. I'd like to start off with, I ask everybody this, how did you end up in insurance? And more specifically, how did you end up getting involved with cybersecurity?
Yeah, I mean, when you introed the fact that I was in the hot seat, that's still a pretty painful memory for me. So, you know, I'm a multi-time founder, had a couple of startups in the past. Before that was, I was interested in the security industry. I was the kid, you know, trying to figure out how to pick locks and, put code pads written on cardboard and crayon on the thresholds of doors. My parents weren't allowed into the other room unless they typed in the right code, you know. So I was sort of interested in asset protection, I guess I'd say, people protection. And, you know, the reality of cybersecurity's necessity came into play when I was in those last companies. I had a fintech company where I was the CTO, and we were getting poked because of it, right? You know, we were passing a few million dollars to the wire every day, and attackers took notice. You know, small company at the time, maybe 50 employees, and I got stuck with the security responsibility, just being sort of the technical co-founder there. Didn't really have an idea about what good looked like in a professional cybersecurity program. And we put a few things in place, but really it was an uncomfortable feeling knowing if we got attacked, if we were going to be able to defend against that, or even possibly know if, you know, we had been attacked, you know, and if someone was in our systems. But, I moved on from that experience into another company where that's really where the rubber really hit the road. I inherited security again at a data science company that works heavily in the political space. And I got put in charge of cybersecurity in front of the midterm elections in 2018. And, if you remember back at that, there was a lot of like worry about state actors, you know, kind of trying to affect our election and different stuff like that. I had to get really serious really quick about the professionalism of the cybersecurity program we were putting in place. And it was really complex to be able to figure it out. We spent a lot of money on contractors and on software and stuff like that. And out of that experience, what I thought was, it is completely necessary to make cybersecurity for small businesses something that kind of works like TurboTax, right? Something that you can impact yourself. And so that's kind of what we tried to do. And I've learned a lot about the insurance industry since then, is that, you know, it's complementary. You know, you have to have good coverage. That is a significant part of any professional cybersecurity program. And so, you know, we've integrated with the industry in the way that, you know, our mission is to protect small businesses. We want to do that with good partners in insurance. And we know that we can help solve some problems with, you know, the slowness of some of the application throughput because of new requirements and some of the frustrations of agency customers. So we're trying to help both sides of the table.
One of the things we're seeing is that there seems to be a slow adoption of the product in the agent channel. And I never understood that, because there is a huge demand for cybersecurity, but I don't think the general public understands it. And I don't think the agents understand it enough to sell it. So the agents are trying to sell a policy that they don't necessarily fully understand. And if they don't understand it, they can't believe it. Therefore, they're not going to put it front in their portfolio. So yeah. How can we change that in the industry?
Yeah, well, I think unfortunately or fortunately, depending on the way that you look at it, the reality is that carriers are locking down on the types of requirements that they have for, insureds to get coverage. Denials are going way up. The two questions, that they used to ask have turned into 20 questions across 4 pages, and in some cases you got to prove all of your answers behind that too. Everything that we're hearing from the folks that we're talking to, and we're certainly in a learning mode about this right now, and so we're talking to a lot of people up and down the stack, from carriers to wholesalers to individual retail agencies and the insureds that they serve. The fact is, the requirements are only going to grow. And so if you want to continue to write cyber liability, and I think where it's going to go is it's going to leak across to, other types of policies as well, in the near future, you're going to have to get good at helping insureds at least understand those requirements, if not do the homework behind them. And so, yeah, it's a big problem because, security has been a traditionally pretty reactive topic, right? Like, no one thinks about security in a lot of businesses until you get bit. And we've seen in the last 2 years with all the ransomware junk and a bunch of other stuff that, like, it's not going to work anymore, right? The fact for small businesses is that, even with excellent coverage, the types of reputational harm that happen are really serious. And so small businesses are getting more proactive about that. All of the regulatory advances that are happening in states and different industries are forcing their hand as well. And so it's moving, it's forcing these folks from a reactive stance to a proactive stance. And if you want to, I think, as an agency, keep your customers and continue to be that trusted advisor, then you got to get proactive as well. And so, to help with that, I think, there's just a ton of education out there about the cybersecurity industry. The problem is, like, you can really wade in just a lot of complexity and jargon and stuff like that. But I just suggest doing some reading on something like darkreading.com or, CIO.com. Assets like that, at an executive level can be really powerful just to give you a little bit more of an understanding about what the cybersecurity industry is trying to do beyond the insurance industry, because I think we're going to get a lot closer in the coming years.
It has been interesting to see the transformation over the cybersecurity industry over the past 20 years since I've been doing insurance. It originally started off as a writer, but only for big companies. If you weren't a big company, you weren't a target. And then compare that today, where everybody is a target. Look at the Target breach, where we had an HVAC company get targeted specifically to get to Target. So nowadays, the hackers are becoming more sophisticated, and the methods that they're using for hacking and getting into your system are becoming more sophisticated. And you may not be the end all target, but I guarantee you that if you don't have the right coverage, that say somebody, look at that HVAC contractor that I'm sure is having an issue because Target, I'm sure, is suing the HVAC contractor. So if they didn't have the adequate cyber policies, you've just kissed your entire business goodbye and your livelihood. And as an agent, I don't think that we are putting our insureds first if we're not at least letting them know of the new cyber risks and the way to protect themselves. What are some of the most common errors that you see agents make when writing cyber policies? Again, most agents, and I don't exclude myself, aren't cyber experts. We know enough what we know the guide, and we know how to put it on the table if we think the customer needs it. But we're not very good at qualifying the customer, and then we're not very good at knowledgeably selling the product. So what are some of those errors that you see?
I have an opinion about this that is, a number of the requirements coming from the carrier level, and this is getting better, I will say that for sure. But what's happening is a lot of these requirements are still sort of stuck in, like, the on-premise days. What I mean by that is, like, due to COVID and just the natural progression of how lots of companies are building up now, everyone's still working from home for the most part, and, like, companies are adopting SaaS products more than they're adopting or installing stuff on any specific device, or keeping a well-defined network. You know, they're using SaaS products. People are working from all different locations. And these requirements are sort of opposed, I think, right now, to that reality. And so you're seeing questions that ask about remote desktop capabilities, and is the network protected by a firewall and multi-factor authentication and stuff like that. And they're all good questions. The thing is, they get confusing to most modern companies because they just don't really apply to their context, right? They don't apply to the folks who don't have an office network. They use a bunch of SaaS tools, and it's a fluid set of connections between these devices and these people. And so where I think a lot of the mistakes spawn from is the lack of understanding on how to map some of the language and these requirements to the current set of technologies used by applicants. And so I think a lot can be solved by walking through those and understanding, hey, if someone's using Google Apps and personal computers, not even company computers, like how does this question actually apply or change? And how do I need to advise my client what they need to do and how they can answer that? Because not often there's not often like an NA answer, you know? There's a yes or a no. And if you answer a no nowadays, that application's gonna get denied. So I think that's where most of the problems arise, is just having to do that mental exercise of mapping some of these long, confusing questions into language and activities that your clients can understand and take action on.
Do you think that the carriers will catch up and update that language?
I do, yeah. And it is getting better. I think the problem that we turn into is they will update the language, and it will become more applicable to the folks who, using more SaaS products than installables on a device, just as an example. But the set of requirements is only going to grow, and the requirement for proof is only going to grow. Because I think what seems to be happening from the folks that we're talking to as well is, on the other side of a incident, the claims that these carriers are having to pay out because of the lack of controls at binding have put the insurer in a place where they didn't adequately protect against the types of attacks a company is subject to. And so they're going to grow the requirement list. And on the receiving end for insureds, I think that there's going to be a period of time here, and I think it's already happening, where a lot of these folks are just going to answer all yeses down the board. But well, then they're going to have an incident, and the carrier is going to say, you got to prove it. Prove they had MFA enabled on all of your accounts. Prove that you're patching your software and your operating systems. Prove that you didn't have, remote access enabled, like you said. And there's, I think, going to be a little bit of a come to Jesus period of time there where you're going to see a lot of claims denials, and you're going to have a lot of frustrated customers, and that's going to make renewals a lot harder next year down the line for so many reasons. And so I think that there is a lot of benefit in making sure that, during the application process, you can put your clients in a position where they can prove every single one of those requirements. And that doesn't have to be a super difficult thing. You can take some screenshot evidence, right? You can make sure they take a screenshot of the log saying, yeah, all of my accounts are protected with MFA. You can take an export of the logs around, your operating systems being updated regularly if it's rolled out correctly. But the finer points there are the hard part, and that's kind of what we try to help with.
We're seeing that same trend, and not just in cybersecurity, but in all the lines of insurance. We're seeing as the insurers are adopting new technology and new actuarial methods to determine causes of loss, we're seeing them narrow down on some of the questions that they're asking that are specific loss indicators. And we are seeing them audit those at renewals. 10 years ago, a carrier would just rubber stamp a renewal. It would be a very easy and automated process. But now we're seeing the carriers really digging in and re-underwriting most of their risks, and we're seeing cyber lead that way, but we're seeing property and casualty now following that. So I think we have had several cyber renewals that will come back with a complete shopping list different than the original quote. So I think you're right there. I think it's only going to get more complicated as the insurers try and figure it out. You think about it. Cyber started off as an endorsement on a general liability policy, and now it's a standalone policy, and now it's its own ecosystem of policies. So you look at the growth and the sophistication that the carriers have had, and that's going to make it hard for our agents to keep up with that and to make sure that they understand what they're underwriting. Because if we had a situation where an agent may not understand a question and will answer it incorrectly, that can not only affect the insured's coverage, but it can affect your own E&O insurance if the carrier decides to deny that claim. Are there any tools that you see that can help us stay ahead of that curve? But again, knowing that we're in the business to sell policies, we care about our customers and we want to help our customers. But we're in the business to close that sale, and we can't be the cyber expert unless that's our primary business. Most of the agents out there are not going to be cyber experts, they're going to be generalists. What are some of the tips that you can help us in working with these guidelines and get just enough education to make sure that we're not putting our business at risk?
I think there's two pieces. There's the educational piece for your agency, your producers. And then there's the part where you have to continue to be a valued advisor for your clients. You got to look smart on a client-facing way and help them actually do the homework behind those requirements. So those are the two pieces, like how do I educate myself about what's required here, and how do I help my client actually do the homework behind those requirements? On the education side, I do see carriers doing more here. Like, they are providing more time, more virtual training for agencies. I'm not so sure that all the time they do an excellent job, advocating for people to attend those. And we're like, we all have busy jobs. We got to go and write better policies and handle our clients and everything. But I would sincerely recommend spending the time, if your carriers, or your wholesale partner, or whoever you kind of have helping you, if there are events, resources where you can go and you can ask those questions, and get a little bit of that information inside that ecosystem, I think it's going to accelerate your ability to work with your carrier, because they're going to be able to tailor that information to what they really care about and how things are going to change. And you had mentioned, renewals are coming up with a whole different set of requirements. Like, that's going to keep happening as carriers continue to figure out how to protect themselves against this types of claim risk. So, search out that kind of stuff. We have a product where we take the carrier requirements, and we take that sort of like set of questions that get asked in your applications, and we map them to a more understandable sort of set of responses, so that we can guide you through how to answer those questions and how to guide your clients. And we do that, for our broker partners, and then you can launch that for your clients as well, right? So it's a resource for them to understand it. The homework part of it is I think actually even harder. And so I've seen some brokerages, when they get a client and they go, I have no idea what multi-factor authentication is. I don't know if I have remote desktop enabled. Do I have a VPN? There's lots of clients that you want to be able to do business with. As you said, the agencies are moving to more general perspective. that will not know what these things mean. And a lot of the, unfortunately, the security industry products are designed for the security industry and techies like me, right? Like, they're not meant for lawyers and financial advisors, right? And so the homework piece is a challenge. The recommendations that I'd make for your listeners are, you know, find a good partner so you don't have to be the expert yourself. Those can take multiple forms. You know, you can do it all the way from in-housing someone, which is, you know, pretty expensive. You can allocate a certain portion of someone's time inside the business to make sure that they are the go-to and put them in a sort of advisory position. You can find fantastic managed service providers, you know, the folks who manage your computers and your accounts and all that stuff. Your clients, I'm sure, have them oftentimes. They can work for you as well, right? And they can help be that that homework doer on behalf of clients. And you can find, you know, a standard set of tools and, you know, guidance and stuff by some of the more proactive cybersecurity companies that are out there trying to help with small businesses, but that's still a growing place. So I think what we'll see in the next year or so here is more on offer for agencies to be able to help their clients do the homework behind the requirements, and the agencies who don't help clients do that are just going to at least see their deal pipelines expand significantly, if not experience some pretty significant drop off at the other end, because those clients are going to go to somewhere who does have those resources and does have the ability to help them through the requirements.
One thing I've learned, if you're not selling the products that the consumers want, you're not going to be selling anything.
That's right.
Could you give me a quick definition? We mentioned it a couple times, but I just want to make sure our agents and us are on the same page. Can you define what proactive risk management is and how that will help with retaining our clients once we get them on the books?
So proactive risk management is making sure that you have the thought in place and the activities behind that thought to mitigate the risks of an attack. The reality of an attack is now like it's, I think the Verizon data breach report had it just this last year in 2021 at 55% of all attacks happening against companies with less than 500 employees, and a significant majority of that percentage is companies with less than 100 employees. You know, it's these small businesses. You know, these folks have to be proactive because it's no longer the just the big guys getting attacked. Proactive risk management is thinking through what type of attack can happen against me or, you know, in my client's firm. What is the likelihood of that attack happening? Low, medium, high. And what's the impact of it, right? So what's going to happen? You know, financial, reputational harm, fines because of a regulated environment, what might that be? And then sort of making decisions from that point of view about what you're going to put in place before that incident happens. And so cyber coverage is a fantastic, necessary tool because, in my opinion, and a lot of the security industry's opinion that I respect, is that it's no longer a question of if, but when you will be attacked. And so you got to have both sides so that that proactive defensive side, your backups, your multi-factor authentication, your policies put in place that instruct people how and when they should react to things, training your staff so that they can point out that odd looking email that has a link that they almost clicked on, but really shouldn't. All of those things can mitigate the impacts of an attack. If you train your staff, they might get one of you, but they're not going to get five of you. If you have multi-factor authentication, they might get your login credentials because you clicked on the wrong link and typed a password in, but they didn't have the code sitting on your phone that they need to get all the way into your account. If you have backups and you get hit with ransomware, you can be up in hours or days rather than possibly never. And so that proactive piece, putting those things in place and thinking about them before, is going to mean a smaller claim, an easier time getting through an event, and hopefully, much less frequent incidents in the first place.
One of the pushbacks that we see when we try and sell cyber is, all right, I back up my data. I don't need to worry about it. And a lot of what we're seeing recently is that, yes, they're backing up their data, but guess what? They're backing up the ransomware along with their data. So people don't realize that most of the ransomware is a time bomb. It's not instantly right when you click on the link, is it going to corrupt your data? It'll corrupt it incrementally, piece at a time, to where you may not notice that your data is corrupted, and you may not have backups that go back that far. And even if you do have backups that go that far, the software is sophisticated enough to block you from accessing it. So again, I don't think that as an insurance agent, that we're not techno people. You go back to the insurance agents. When I first started, I had my IBM Selectric and my typewriter, and I was typing manual accord forms in triplicate. Okay, if we could go back to marketing via smoke signal, I would be okay with that. So a lot of the older agents, or experienced agents, are not technologically savvy. We know we plug in a box and we can turn it on, and we know, oh, we have the new thing called a laptop now. We're not that technology savvy. The new agents are. So we're seeing this division of the new agents are probably selling a lot more cyber, and they're prospecting and marketing differently than the standard agents, and they're rocking it because they're adapting with the newer things. That leads me to two questions here. One is, what are the biggest misconceptions that the insurance industry has about cyber insurance? And then, what are some of the best marketing tips that you can give our agents to help them sell more cyber insurance?
One of the biggest misconceptions that I see, and it's not just in an insurance industry, it's a problem with the way I think the anyone outside and sometimes inside the security industry sees some of the artifacts of the security industry. And that is that, like, a lot of people think that compliance is security, right? So, hey, I answer these questions, I'm compliant with them as of right now. Or, hey, I live in the state of New York and I'm a financial services business, so there are cybersecurity regulations that they have to obey, and I'm compliant with that. So it's sort of a checkbox, checklist exercise in checking those boxes. And then they go, okay, well, we're done. The reality is security is a process, not a destination. And the thought that, like, just by completing the checklist at that one point in time that you're good to go, you're safe, is a pretty dangerous misconception. The fact is that these types of threats that are coming out are oftentimes not targeted, are what we call spray and pray types of attacks, and they they change like new variations of COVID, right? Like, there are things that your compliance checklist of last quarter don't cover because new types of attacks are happening, and attackers recycle old stuff all the time throughout the years to, change the different types of defenses that are necessary, right? So they can get in. So if you're just kind of looking at being compliant at one point in time, and you're not continuing to look at your security stance on a regular basis, you're gonna get caught in a bad place. Compliance is important, but your security program should be that parent where we go, okay, are we compliant with the things you need to be compliant with? That's sort of one module of a real professional cybersecurity program. So that's the biggest thing that I would say to that. Marketing tips, be proactive, right? So go out and leverage the client list that you have, and make sure to educate them about what I'm sure most of them are already thinking about and looking for an expert to help them on, looking for a trust advisor who they already have a relationship with to speak on the topic. So There is just an immense amount of value right now in thought leadership by your existing advisor network. People are getting slammed with advertising all the time. As I think you would know, that there's a bunch of new technology companies selling sort of insurtech products, and they're being, in certain cases, attracted away from their agencies for some of these new types of policies. And so the best thing I think you can do is make sure that they continue to see you as an advisor. And to do that, you've got to communicate with them. And one of the best simplified ways that I think you can do that right out of the gate without having to really understand cyber an incredible amount is subscribe to a couple of what you call threat feeds. Go on Google, type in, cybersecurity news. You'll find newsletters all over the place there, and have a regular occurrence, even if it's just once a month, of reading through those newsletters, highlighting the different types of vulnerabilities that are coming up, the different types of attacks that are happening, the ways that scammers are trying to fool you through email or text message or what have you, and curate those and send those to your clients once a month. Be that outlet for them to go, oh, like there's a new, text message, phishing type of attack that, we should be aware of, that's targeting financial advisors and trying to get them to wire out client money. Like, that is something that as a CEO or CFO or business owner, I'm gonna prioritize and actually read, and then I'm gonna appreciate that when, your renewal reminder email comes.
I think that cybersecurity has moved on beyond gift card requests. I think they've gotten a lot more sophisticated, and they play on how smart we think we are, because we all think we're smarter than the average Joe, when I can tell you I'm not. So can you tell us a little bit about your company and what you do in the market, and how that would apply to our insurance demographic?
Sure. Yeah. So our mission at the end of the day is to protect small businesses. We saw in the insurance industry that there is a highly cooperative sort of partnership between what we're trying to do with a security program that works a little bit like TurboTax. It's self-serve. Non-experts can use it, and it's professional response and defense at the end of the day. We saw what we could do there for our small business clients, alongside some of the struggles of agencies, right? The agency struggles that we see and that we've been able to help with are the fact that application pipelines are slowing way down because you have to coach your clients through this growing list of requirements. Customers are frustrated that they have to do this, and they often can't do the homework behind those requirements, which means elongating out or possibly having a client just not pull the trigger at all. And it puts you in a position as an agency where you look behind the curve. And so we created a couple of new products at the end of last year that have seen good pickup. And they do two things. One is what we call our Cyber Fitness Assistant, which takes those carrier requirements that you have and maps them to helpful resources that help insureds understand what the question is asking. And then if they aren't in a good position with it, where to go next, right? And so it kind of makes sure that pre-bind frustrating process of, I don't even know what this means, how do I answer this question, conversation, goes a lot better for agencies and takes a lot less time for you to do as a producer. The other side is that homework element. And so we have a cybersecurity program that helps you roll out the tools like, antivirus and patching agents and password management applications, things like that, and helps you make the configuration changes necessary, like making sure that multi-factor authentication is enabled and a bunch of other security configurations that are necessary and being asked by carriers. So we've taken that program and we've curated it based on your carrier's requirements. So we take those requirements. We take the results of that cyber fitness assessment where the, customer, the applicant has said, no, I don't have this, or yes, I need help with this. And then we give them the module that actually walks them through right there how to do the homework behind that. And we wrap in all the tools and stuff so it's integrated and synced and all stays in one place.
How can our agents get a hold of you to add your product to their product offering?
So the website's havocshield.com, but I'm really serious about being a human in front of all the technology. The space is still one that can be confusing, and we want to be good partners. And so that always starts with us as just a human conversation about where people are at, whether they're going to become a customer or not. So, just email me. It's Brian, Brian, at havocshield.com.
Is there anything that you think would help our agents familiarize themselves with cyber and to help them sell it and to again put it in their portfolio that we have not discussed yet today?
So the biggest thing I'll say is, get your fundamentals in line, and make sure that you have them done, because you'll be able to go and you'll be able to educate folks on the actual steps to do them in their business when it comes time to help an applicant. And the fundamentals are, multi-factor on everything if the option's available to you. Especially on email, make sure it's configured. If an attacker gets your credentials, it's just going to be that much harder to get in because they don't have that code that gets messaged to you or you have to type in from an app. There's a lot of flavors to that, depending on if you use Google or Office 365 or Dropbox or Box or whatever it might be. Go through and do them so that you kind of understand the different variations and you can advise your clients on what's required there. And it's going to look really impressive if you can be helpful in that way. The other thing, you mentioned backups, make sure you back up your stuff, and make sure it's off-site and encrypted, that you have a process for doing this on a regular basis, and make sure that you test those backups. So a lot of people, as you said, do these backups unknowingly that they are backing up whatever malicious stuff is already on those devices. Make sure that you scan those backups for malicious stuff, and that you test recovering them. And the last thing is a significant amount of attacks come in because of unpatched, unupdated software operating systems, just old stuff with known vulnerabilities that attackers, and by attackers I mean high school students with some free software, can scan the internet en masse and understand and see that you are subject to these vulnerabilities and take advantage of them. And so one of the best ways to just remove that whole class of attacks is get good about updating your software and your operating systems. There's still a lot of stuff that doesn't do it automatically for you. And so know what's on your computer, develop a process around making sure that those things stay fresh.
A funny story. My specialty was the gaming industry and casinos when I was insuring. And I walked into a casino and found out that their entire system was running Windows XP. Now, this was last year. I'm like, you have a multi-billion-dollar operation, and they're running an operating system that's older than my son. So it brings up to the point, I think another thing that we need to do is we need to walk the talk, and we need to practice what we preach. We need to make sure that in our own offices we're following all the precepts, that we're updating, that we're using two-factor authentication, that we're backing up, and that we're making sure. I think we need to be the example, because I think if we try and sell it to these business owners and we're not following our own advice, that makes it a lot harder to sell the policy. In summary, Brian, your email is brian@havocshield.com and your website is havocshield.com. Are those the best ways to get a hold of you?
Yep, you got it. And one offer, just we're trying to make sure that we are a resource for folks who have to go and get better at this. And so it's not out yet, but we will be starting sort of like a private group webinar series for folks in the insurance industry. And it's going to be highly consumable, action-oriented types of stuff, 20 minutes at a time, couple times a quarter. It's going to be stuff that we do for free and only for agencies that want to sort of get better at this as a dedicated thing. So if folks are interested in that, yeah, shoot me an email and I'll make sure people get invited.
Thank you very much, Brian. This has been very informative, and it's been a great conversation. And agents,
Thanks, John.
please don't be afraid to reach out and to help your agency sell more cyber. That's it for this edition of the Insurance Huddle. We'll see you next time. In the meantime, be sure to check out our Facebook page and Medium blog, linked in the description box down below, for more great resources. This podcast has been brought to you by CoverWallet for Agents, the easiest way for insurance agents to quote, bind, and service their small business clients. All online and in minutes. Check us out at coverwalletforagents.com.